Have you guys been watching the World Cup at all over the first 2 days, Gare?
I've been flipping in and out. When it gets to the opening round, it can be a little spotty. I did watch the Spain-Portugal, which is a draw for the ages. So, and that's hard to pull off. It was a sensational match. And, I wouldn't have minded if the World Cup had ended right there. It would have been a great final.
Yeah. Well, the crazy thing, Josh, about the World Cup is, you know, most of these games are pretty low scoring. I mean, you got the best players in the world taking part. So, you know, the 3-3 games are pretty rare. And to see it yesterday with two teams like Portugal and Spain, even more rare. But when you have a guy like Cristiano Ronaldo on the field and you have the players of Spain's caliber, sometimes these games happen. And that's about as good. I know Russia and Saudi Arabia opened things up, but that's about as good as an opening, you know, weekend game as it gets between Portugal and Spain.
Yeah, anytime you get to powerhouses, I guess we'll call them, even though Spain got rid of their manager a couple of days before the tournament in a shocker and maybe don't have the depth of talent that they did when they were winning Euros and World Cups, it seemed like every couple of years alternating. When you have those couple of teams in the same group, then you have the potential for a real epic game, however early on in the tournament it is. And yeah, you were talking about Argentina and Iceland right now, just kicking off in the second half. And this has the makings of a very entertaining second half as well. I'm just kind of curious, like if you were to poll Spanish fans and Portuguese fans after that game, like what would the mood be? Like if you're a Spanish fan, considering you fired your manager a couple of days before the tournament and maybe you went into it with lower expectations because it was clear that there were maybe the program was in a bit of a period of transition or uncertainty. Would you take a 3-3 draw in your first match with Portugal and withstand a hat trick from Ronaldo? Like you'd figure if he's putting up a hat trick, then you're probably going to get waxed 3-0 or 3-1. So to be 3-3. And on the flip side, if you're a Portuguese fan, Ronaldo scores a hat trick and you need the third goal in like the 87th or 88th minute or whatever it was on a gorgeous free kick to tie it. I wonder how each respective fan base is feeling this morning.
What was that? I saw the one stat that Ronaldo had 44 previous free kicks from and not scored. Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. So the 45th one is a charm.
Yeah.
The other stat that I loved about that game was that only one Portuguese player covered less ground, you know, who ran a shorter distance than Ronaldo did for the game. He's evolved, he's evolved or at least strategized about his game management now. The aging process has probably been a little kinder to him than you might have anticipated. Earlier in his career, he exerted a physical force over the game, but now I guess he depends far more on his read of play.
Yeah, and you saw it, one point in that game where I saw the video of it yesterday where he's just sprinting down the field and beating everybody to the other end of the field. Just shows you, even at his age, just, you know, how fast he is out there and the skill level is unreal, as we saw in that free kick. But to answer your question, Josh, I think if you're Spain, you're upset because you had a lead and you conceded late. And if you're Portugal, you're very happy taking that draw because we're down in that game.
But up twice.
You were also up twice,
right? It was a real seesaw.
Yeah, it was definitely a seesaw match. But in the end, I think Spanish fans are probably more upset than Portuguese fans just because they had the lead with just a few minutes left and were not able to seal the deal. But, you know, what I love about this tournament, and I was saying it earlier in the week that, you know, I don't have any rooting interest for any team necessarily. I mean, I'm not from any country that is in this tournament right now. So it's kind of tough to watch from that aspect. But I love the storylines. I love the players that game yesterday. I mean, that's as good as it gets on any type of stage for world soccer, you know, whether it's Euro, whether, you know, it's Champions League with club teams or the World Cup. 3-3, that game between Portugal and Spain is as good as it gets. But it's the Ronaldo storylines. It's the Lionel Messi storyline that we're seeing right now. Can he finally get that World Cup that has eluded him for, you know, his entire career? You know, probably unlikely. I don't think many people believe Argentina is going to be there at the end, but that's why I watch this tournament, more so for the stories, the individual stories, as opposed to, you know, is Germany as a team going to win it again, Gare?
I'm all about the minnows, though, right?
Right.
Like to see Iceland compete here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in other years, my minnow would be Ireland, of course.
Yeah.
But one of the Irelands, it really wouldn't matter to me. Prefer the South. But, it's easy for me to go over to Iceland on this one. And, you know, there was nothing better for me than watching Iceland take down England in Euro. So to see something like that again, I love that. I don't know. I mean, Iceland would be a tremendous story if they can get through into the second round. You talk about it's the size of the population base is the size of what, Hamilton or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like 330,000 or something in the entire country. And yeah. I mean, they have an opportunity here today. Argentina is a strong team, of course, but it is 1-1, so you never know what's going to happen.
Got away with a handball.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen in the next 40 minutes or so in this game. So to pull off a win here would be an absolutely incredible story, Josh. But what are you looking forward to the rest of the way in this tournament?
Well, I was really looking forward to seeing if Mo Salah could get back on the field after suffering a shoulder injury. Was it a dislocation or a separation or something in the Champions League final, which was really devastating? It basically took Liverpool out of that game. And then you were wondering if he was going to be physically fit enough to play in the opener against Uruguay. And unfortunately, the manager kind of before the match declared that he wasn't going to be able to give it a go. And there were a lot of shots of him. It was yesterday morning on the bench looking pretty sullen, right? Egypt hasn't been to a World Cup in quite some time, and he gets them there in the qualifier. I'm pretty sure he scored on a penalty kick late in the match that got them in Alexandria. So I would like to see him get back on, even if Egypt is unable to navigate their way to the next round. It just would be kind of devastating. You talk about storylines for a player of that caliber who's just kind of been like an asteroid of an upward trajectory in terms of his career arc to get on the field in the world's biggest stage.
Uruguay is just in World Cup tournaments to suck all the joy out of it.
Yeah, Suarez.
Right? They are the ultimate spoiler. You know, when you think that Uruguay won in Brazil back in, I guess it was 50, in front of the largest soccer crowd ever assembled, like 200,000 in Brazil,
yeah.
You know, talk about a tough road game, you know, but again, like they are just there to play spoiler.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And they did that yesterday. And when it comes to, you know, Mo Salah, I believe, you know, some people have hinted that, you know, he probably wasn't going to play yesterday just because they're going to save him for some of the games that they actually really need him in order for Egypt to you know, make it to the next round. So the game, they essentially conceded to Uruguay, and we're thinking, you know, we'll probably need him down the road and try to keep him healthy and try to get 90 minutes out of him because they definitely need him. He is their best player by far. Let's talk about the 2026 World Cup that is coming to Canada, the United bid alongside the U.S. and Mexico. We saw the announcement made earlier in the week, and, you know, I think – for me, I'm still trying to put it in perspective because I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest soccer fan, but, you know, talking to people that are massive soccer fans from this country, whether it's, you know, Craig Forrest or, you know, seeing James Sharman talk about it, John Molinaro, this is a massive, massive deal that I think, you know, will become bigger as we get closer to 2026, of course, and we find out all the official venues and where it's going to take place, and we find out, you know, the tickets and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Once it finally does arrive, people are definitely going to be into it. But as it stands right now, it's kind of hard to, you know, figure out what's going to happen here, Gare, because I think we know there's a large participation base for soccer in this country. You know, a lot of people play the sport at a recreational level, but there hasn't always been that, you know, those grassroots and that ability to, you know, get to a higher level. And we talk about the national team, of course, and all their struggles throughout the years. But I think that's the hope now, knowing that the World Cup is coming to Canada in 8 years. You know, maybe you're going to be able to keep some of those players that otherwise would have, you know, gone to different countries to play for other teams in order to make the World Cup. But if Canada is going to get an automatic bid, which, you know, it seems like people are expecting, that's going to go a long way to making sure Canada has a pretty strong base heading into 2026.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the results of recent teams at the under 20 and under 17 international competitions, and the one thing that I was struck by was that. On a team on last year's under 20 team, all but one of the players was affiliated with the Whitecaps, the Impact, TFC. Just one player was with Auxerre, I guess. Emil Legault was with Auxerre in the French league. But I think in years past, we probably would see more players offshore. And that might complicate things in terms of coordinating time to get players coordinated, you know, team practices and the like. So I think that probably points in a favorable direction moving forward. I would say that there have been patches over the past 20 years when Canada's age group in men's play has been better than current status. But you know what? I think it's a wonderful development. I actually covered the Canadian national team a little bit back in '86 when they made their single sort of undistinguished World Cup appearance.
Yep.
And so I think this has a chance to be Canada's greatest World Cup appearance because there's not much to beat.
And especially, Gare mentions 86, so it'll be 50 years in 2026, assuming that's...
Oh, good God.
Yeah, that's the next...
You're making me feel so old.
A good kind of benchmark, because they're not going to... you would think be there in 2022. Maybe they're, and if they get the automatic bid, that'd be great. They're 79th right now in the FIFA world ranking. So obviously they have some work to do, but yeah, it's a great story. I think it will be a really cool event, but for me, it's the most important thing is what does this do for soccer in Canada going forward? Can this be kind of a springboard to more success at the international level, right? A more consistent program that is producing results, whether it's in the World Cup or the Gold Cup. And I look at Alphonso Davies as kind of the player who I would think would be the leader at that point, because he's 17 right now. So in 8 years, he'll be 25, probably right in the prime of his career, so to speak. And if they're in there, then what better player to kind of be the face of the tournament here in Canada for the games that are here, and really maybe can inspire a generation of young players to propel the Soccer Canada program to some success. Because in my lifetime, I'm going to be 30 in a year. I think there's been some Gold Cup kind of bites here and there where they've had a little bit of success, but it's really been kind of fleeting. And I think for casual soccer fans in this country that don't maybe have some European ancestry or connections to the game, then maybe you're looking at the Canadian soccer team as an instrument to kind of get you more engaged in the game. And I would say if Canada is a player in the World Cup at any point, then that's certainly going to pique my interest more than TFC or any European club team. And that's what I'm going to be looking for, is what kind of impact Canada, if they are in that World Cup, has on casual interest.
I would say that... on under 20 play recently, Canada is better than its world ranking for the men's national team.
Okay.
The last year, I guess in the biggest under 20 tournament, France was the host. Canada lost. Canada advanced through the first round, drew Portugal, beat Turkey, and lost in the second round 2-1 to France, and France was the host. So, I mean, would they be in the top 40 in the world, the under 20 team? Yeah, I'm pretty sure they would be. So that offers a little promise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, like I was saying before, you're just looking for a spark and to light, you know, the fire for the groundswell of, you know, support for Canadian soccer, and this is probably going to be the event. You hope it's going to come earlier before 2026. You know, maybe people will start getting interested into it more. Maybe better players are going to start playing for the men's national team. But once 2026 arrives and it comes and goes, then we'll really have to see where it goes from there with the Canadian soccer program and the interest in the sport around this country.